Everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Raw Rundown here on Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh, joined as always when we talk about Raw by David J. McCutcheon. He's here to show the world, but unlike Dolph Ziggler, you don't want to set yourself on fire whenever he's around. Hi, David.
Well, I mean, give it time. Come on, Kenny, you're setting the bar too low. Hey, everybody, I hope that everyone is doing well in this road to WrestleMania, as it were. We've got this fantastic build to the grandest stage of them all, Kenny. Me and you, we're going to be there live and in living color.
Yeah, we are. It's. Sondra was at the show last night in Detroit, and she loved it. She loved being there live. She had a great time. She took a friend who'd never watched wrestling before.
I saw that on Twitter.
So I can only imagine trying to explain the opening segment to that person. she was there, and it's funny because I really enjoyed the show last night. I thought it was a good show, and I think they're doing a good build. But there's a couple of people who are kind of like, they're not into it, and I don't know. If you're into it, you're into it. If you're not, you're not. It seems to me from the sort of feedback that I see that more people are into it than not at the moment, the kind of indication. But I wanted to ask you, before we talk about Raw or anything, probably not going to do as much banter, in inverted commas, this week, because there's so much to talk about. Fastlane, Sondra and I talked about it on Patreon, patreon.com/insidetheropes. We talk about it for 85 minutes. The main event seemed to get lots of praise from people. Did you enjoy the main event of Fastlane? Were you able to get anything from it?
I thought that it was a very good main event. Some of the stuff that they did in there, I love the finish. I still don't understand why Shane McMahon is a babyface, considering he outright cheated and took the title away from both Sammy and Kevin. So that I don't understand whatsoever, Kenny. Can you shed some light on that? Can anyone shed some light on that?
Well, I mean, on Talking Smack, which was on afterwards, Shane's motives were more clear because, again, Talking Smack, the great thing about it is that people have their character motivations explained. And the whole idea is that, you know, Shane was out there, which he shouldn't have been, of course. But what was so good about it was, as soon as Kevin Owens kicked him in the face, he just lost it. And Renee Young, I don't know if you saw Talking Smack, but Renee Young was giving him a hard time. Like, Renee Young was like, you know, you got involved. You know, you cost these two guys the title. And he's like, yeah, my emotions got the better of me and da 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 da. But I think the pro to it is that it was the best Shane McMahon, Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens thing they've done in months in terms of furthering the story. And, I mean, I cannot imagine after watching Fastlane that those two are in the Battle Royal. I would be amazed if they are. It felt to me like they were.
I have no clue what the hell they're going to do.
The rumor going around, the thing I've heard that seems to make the most sense is Sammy, Kevin Owens, and Shane in a triple threat with Bryan as the referee. But I have a theory, I have a prediction of what I think is going to happen at WrestleMania. The only thing I think you can't do is you can't have Shane and Kevin Owens together.
We've already done that. I was telling Val, where do you really go from here? They've already done Hell in a Cell.
So I think that it's going to end up with Shane and Sammy together as heels with Owens as the babyface.
Oh, man.
Because that's the only way I can think of that you would go, and then in the end, you know, Daniel Bryan's right, he never did anything wrong, it's Shane that was the arsehole, blah, 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 blah. That's the only way I can kind of see them going, but I think that at the very least, the Shane, Sammy, Kevin stuff, it deserves to be blown off at WrestleMania.
Yeah,
with the amount of time
yeah.
they've given it.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, it has to, but I just... And plus, I mean, those guys, they deserve a WrestleMania match that matters.
Yeah, they do, for absolute sure. They totally deserve a match that matters. The other thing I wanted to ask you before we go in-depth about Raw, I know Ian Milne had asked us on Twitter about it, listeners to the show, about, you know, Ronda Rousey had been advertised for all the Raws leading up to WrestleMania, and then they deleted the article, and she obviously wasn't on Raw last night. So if you were in St. Louis, and you were going to go to Raw, and they'd advertised Lesnar and Rousey, and then they weren't on the show, would you still be open-minded to seeing if the show was any good or not? Or would that for you just kind of go, no, false advertising, I'm not happy, I'm not going to enjoy it? Where would you kind of be if you were there live?
You got to make the best of things if you're live. You put out that much money, unless you're just going to go and get a refund right away. But I mean, to me, if you're sitting there and you bought tickets months ago and you're really excited to go and see the show, you weren't expecting those two whenever you bought the tickets months ago. So why would you expect them there now? Make the best of it is how I see it. However, if you purchase the tickets specifically to see those two performers, go get your refund and bitch about how you had to pay $30 for parking.
Yeah, I guess so. I think there was a fair amount of walk up in Detroit, so I guess those people have more of a point.
Yes, yeah, for sure. Yeah, and you know, I mean, hey, people can bitch about how they spend their money any way they want to. Kenny, I've had to watch Raw illegally for 2 weeks in a row because my brand new cable provider recorded Raw, and then whenever I go to watch it, the second I try to fast forward anything, the DVR shuts down and deletes all of my recordings off of the DVR.
Who's your cable provider? Matt Hardy?
You'd think. Charter Spectrum is my new cable provider. And I should say former cable provider, because what is the worst thing you can do in my household, Kenny? I'll give you the answer. Piss off my wife. And if you want to go and delete all of her episodes of Supernatural that she has to watch before she watches them, or The Walking Dead before she gets to it, she's going to rip out your fucking trachea, Kenny.
I can imagine that Val would do that exact thing.
Yeah, yeah. She made pterodactyl noises out of rage like Dolph Ziggler does for attention.
Well, so let's talk about Raw, because I feel like this is a big episode with a lot to talk about. So don't worry.
You're used to things that are big, and you do talk about them a lot.
Listen, when you've got it, flaunt it. That's what I say, you know. If you've got a tiny pecker, you may want to just hide it. But when you've got a schlong, then you just, you know.
Or you're like me, and you just, you Ric Flair it everywhere you go.
if anyone in the world had a micro penis and would shout about it, it would be you.
Yeah, like, yeah, there's no doubt. It'd just be, look at this specimen, everybody. I'll tell you what, you don't get to see it for free, though. You got to pay for admission.
To the world's most disappointing roller coaster. Hop on! Where am I hopping on? Okay, so yeah, there's lots to talk about. There's a battle royal that everyone's up in arms about. There's a promo with John Cena that everybody's talking about. So let's get straight into it. Raw is in Detroit at the Little Caesars Arena. We open the show with Kurt Angle coming out. He's coming out for a promo. The crowd are very into him. He talks about how he's excited to team with Ronda to face Triple H and Stephanie at WrestleMania. He feels sorry about what Ronda's going to do to Stephanie, but he won't feel bad about what he's going to do to Triple H. He brings up the Universal title match with Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar, which was booed as a match before anything even happened. Angle said he was told that Brock Lesnar's not here tonight, and he'd heard it might be to do with transportation issues. He didn't know. Roman Reigns comes out looking absolutely pissed. Reigns gets on the mic and says he's not surprised that Lesnar isn't here because he doesn't respect Angle, the company, the fans. He said that Lesnar didn't show up last week or this week. What are the repercussions going to be? And then he said there won't be any repercussions because Lesnar is Vince's boy. Angle tries to get the mic, but Reigns sort of, you know, doesn't let him and says, you know, the best case scenario, if he didn't show up for work, would be a huge fine, and the worst case would be they can't feed their kids. I hate that line so, so much. The idea that, like, if you're a wrestler in WWE and you lost your job, like, you would be on the breadline of, like, you know, like, he earns $1 million a year. He's fine. The guy is not on food stamps just yet.
I love the idea of him, like, going up, like, fucking some Dickensian ragamuffin with his, like, hat out for people to pour porridge into it. And he's just like, please, sir, I have children's to feed.
Oh, God. But then Reigns says the real problem is Vince McMahon. He walked past Vince tonight And Vince didn't even have the respect to tell him about Lesnar. He said, that's the man I bust my ass for. It's one thing to be disrespected by Brock, but he will not be disrespected by Vince McMahon. He leaves the ring, goes backstage, and the camera follows him to the gorilla position, where he starts jawjacking with Vince. Shane's there.
What the fuck's Shane doing there?
So the whole idea behind this is obviously, you know, we're breaking the fourth wall. This has nothing to do with the storylines. Shane would be there, which he would not be. And a lot of other people are there. There's a great bit where Reigns is like approaching Vince, and like Shane's there, and you can see Reigns is like, I want to talk to the promoter, son, bitch. Like, and just like, just no time for Shane. And and Reigns is like, you're not going to talk to me? And Vince took off his headset and like, let's go talk, blah, 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 blah. A very unique opening segment, which then we get Renee Young outside Vince's office. Reigns comes out, he just looks really dejected and walks away. Vince comes out and says that, you know, Lesnar's not his boy, or Paul Heyman's boy, or anyone else's. He had no intention of disrespecting Roman, but he said, as his cousin would say, know your role and shut your mouth. He said, Brock doesn't like people, but that doesn't make him a bad guy. He probably doesn't like the fans, but he respects competition in the ring or in the octagon. Lesnar does have his privileges, but Vince thinks he's earned them. And Vince assured the fans that Lesnar would appear next week. You've got my word on it. And then he said, oh, by the way, Roman has been temporarily suspended. I don't know how you unpack this segment. I don't know how you begin to cover it. I will say this. I thought that the execution of this was excellent for everybody involved. If you think about it for a second, your brain will hurt. Because obviously everybody who... Like the people that they are aiming this towards... are very aware that Roman is Vince's boy, in inverted commas. So that's the problem with it. But if you take that out of it and you try and just look at the performance, I think it was... I loved the fact they went to gorilla position and it seemed like it wasn't supposed to happen and Shane was there. And there was a lot of stuff about it that I loved, but I also accept all the criticisms about it as well. What did you think about it just overall?
I thought it was really stupid. This did not work for me whatsoever because it's the guy who we know is Vince's boy coming out and accusing someone else of being Vince's boy. This was very blatantly Vince's way of going, nothing else has worked with Roman, so now he's Stone Cold, everybody. Everybody cheer Stone Cold Steve Austin. So this just, it failed miserably for me. The wife was audibly rolling her eyes, which I didn't know was a thing that could happen, but it did. So I could hear Val's eyeballs rolling around in her skull at how ridiculous this was. The other thing, too, is what a gigantic pussoid Roman Reigns looks like here. So he gets suspended for the day, right? Now, what would Steve Austin do if Vince McMahon goes, you got to go home, Steve. Go home now. You're grounded. Go into the corner. You're grounded. What would Steve Austin have done, Kenny?
He would have found a way to get back into the arena and made Vince's life hell.
Uh-huh, and probably got arrested by the end of it and said, oh, you son of a bitch. I don't give one flying fuck about you. He would have done something like that. And everyone would have cheered, and it would have been hilarious and wonderful. And we would have been like, man, that guy truly does not give a fuck what his boss thinks. And what did Roman Reigns do, Kenny?
He left.
Well, all I can say is all those training tips that he's been given as a dog, he's a good dog. He's a good dog. He listened. He gets a treat now. He gets a treat, Kenny! Good boy, good boy. They said, sit, good boy. And then he went to the corner and he sat. And so now he gets a treat. Good dog.
I enjoyed it, but I'm absolutely aware of all the problems with it. Like, I'm not going to argue with anything that you said.
Yes.
But...
And also, though, why storyline-wise, why was Shane there?
No, there's no reason storyline-wise. The whole idea of Shane being there is that it's out of the story. I guess
that sort of pisses in the mouth of the kayfabe of the whole thing, right? Like,
but I think the thing is, the whole thing would work if anybody believed that Lesnar was the guy that Vince was protecting, and Roman was not.
But it's the opposite.
It's the opposite, yeah. But I think that they were. I think everybody played their part well, and I think that having Vince involved and going to the gorilla position and all that stuff's good. But there's no part of me that kind of goes, this is going to get Roman over, because it's all when you can do all this stuff and you might even get him cheered on the night. I don't think you will, but say a miracle happens and you get him cheered on the night, which you very well could do, but it's not going to last. As soon as you get to Raw the next night and he's got the belt, he'll get booed again. But we've talked about this for ages. Let's just get it over with and let him do what he wants to do. Let him have Reigns beat Lesnar, fine. I guess my question would be, so this has got Paul Heyman all over it, right? This whole story reeks of something that Paul Heyman would put together.
Yeah, the pulling back the curtain, et cetera, et cetera.
I know you're not that interested in seeing Reigns versus Lesnar anyway, but
no one is.
Is what they're trying to do here more interesting, or is there a way they could do it that would be more interesting to you if this is the match that we have to have?
I thought this was a massive step in the wrong direction this week. Up until this episode, I've actually been into it. I've been into the whole Brock doesn't care about the fans, probably true. He doesn't care about the title, probably true. He doesn't make the dates, true. So any time that you tell a certain amount of truth to something, it automatically becomes intriguing, Kenny. They always say that the best heels don't go out and tell lies, they tell the truth. And that's why they're such good heels, because the truth can be a bitter pill to swallow, and automatically you dislike people who tell the truth. It's the reason why I am often so hated on this program, Kenny, because I go out and I tell the truth about what's going to happen, and then everybody gets mad at me for it. So it's very easy to hate the truth, and that was the direction they were going. It was a really nice build. I really enjoyed the way that they were doing that. And what did they do this week, Kenny? They went out and they didn't tell the truth. They told a lie, a big, fat, nefarious lie, that Brock Lesnar is Vince's golden boy, whenever we all know the truth is that Roman Reigns is Vince's golden boy.
Well, no, the thing is, one of the truths is that Brock Lesnar is one of Vince's golden boys. The only problem is the only guy that's more of his golden boy is Roman.
Yeah, there's no doubt. It's absolutely true.
Everyone knows it. It was absolutely mental and it made no sense, but I enjoyed it. I can't explain it in any other way. It was really, really bonkers, and I don't really understand where it's going. But
that's sort of part of the fun, though, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I guess that I'm enjoying it, and so the thing for me is I don't really have any investment in Roman Reigns beating Brock Lesnar. There's not any sort of part of my brain that goes, I really want to see that or whatever.
Right.
So
right.
To me, it's like, you're going to do bonkers stuff where you have Shane backstage and Roman, going, calling Vince at a gorilla position and Reigns getting suspended. Yeah, fuck it. Why not? It's all a bit mental. I'll watch that.
For me, I think every episode, it's like going into a nice restaurant, Kenny, and they start preparing the dishes and you're sitting right next to the kitchen, right? So you can smell all the dishes that they're preparing for you, and you sit down and you go, oh boy, that's a real savory scent. What is that? What is that scent? You go, oh, that's mac and cheese. Oh, mac and cheese. You can smell the breadcrumbs, And that was everything leading up to this week, right? And you're just like, oh boy. And you smell the arancini baking. Oh my goodness, the cheesy, delicious, deep fried arancini. The rice is covered in cheese. Can you slice it open? It's just a sex in a little fried packet of dough, right? But then this week, you're all like, what is that smell? It smells familiar. Oh God, what is that smell? Is that shit? They're not cooking shit back there, are they, Kenny? No. Why? No. Am I? And then you look next to you, and you are seated next to the kitchen, but juxtaposed to that is the bathroom, Kenny. And, oh, boy, that shit's getting a little too close to my mac and cheese right now.
Never thought we'd get that description of this segment, but there you go. No, I've got no idea what they're going to do next, but yeah, it's bonkers and it doesn't really make any sense. So, do you know the thing is that I watched Raw and then I was listening to various podcasts today, and I made the mistake of listening to Wade Keller's podcast with
I'm not a fan of Wade Keller
with Travis Bryant, and I listened to it and at the end of it I just thought, I don't understand why they cover wrestling.
Yeah, no,
like,
doubt.
It's just like they just don't enjoy anything at any point of any part of it's just yeah. But anyway, so that was the opening segment. Very, very weird. You know, if Sondra was messaging me going, I have no idea what's happening. Why is Vince on screen? And I guess, I mean, how do you explain it to a non-wrestling fan? I guess you say something like, this is kind of like if midway through a movie, an actor just walked off the set and started talking to the director.
Yeah, yeah. I guess it would be like some sort of weird Spike Jonze movie or something.
Yeah, something bizarre. So,
yeah, yeah.
Up next,
like adaptation times three or something. Yeah, very, very strange.
Up next, we get Sasha Banks with Bayley in her corner against Sonya Deville with Absolution. The match goes 7 minutes. Pretty nothing match. But in the end, Bayley kind of stops the distractions and Sasha gets the win. Bayley then leaves after she's kind of done her job in helping Sasha. And then Absolution beat down Sasha, but Bayley's nowhere to be seen. So they're still kind of playing it as you don't really know who's going to go heel out of Sasha and Bayley. How do you like the way they're playing it? Is there something you'd like to see more of or less of? How do you feel about the way they're kind of doing a slow burn on who's going where with this?
I say that we are in the final week of them being on the fence with it, and it needs to kick into high gear next week. Otherwise, I have this lingering doubt that we won't see this match, or if we do, it'll be on the pre-show or something. So, yeah, I don't know. I feel like we're starting to get into Jeopardy time.
I mean, I don't think we're going to see this match at WrestleMania.
You don't?
If there's a women's battle royal and a men's battle royal, that means there's going to be 14 matches. And so that's like, what, 10 on the main card, 4 in the pre-show? I would be amazed if they had a 15th match.
Don't forget a concert with a bigot.
Well, I mean, if we're gonna attack people's personal lives, we've got a world title match with a flat earther, so we're just really covering every spectrum that we can get.
It's true.
Yeah, I just can't see it happening if they're going to do the Battle Royal thing. I mean, I don't know if they then hold it off and do the turn at the Battle Royal. I think they need to start, like, I don't mind the slow build, but I think soon something needs to happen because they're in danger of it kind of getting to a point where you go, like, I was fine with this, but if in 2 weeks we're still sitting at this point, I'm probably going to be bored of it.
Yeah, for sure. No, in fact, 1 week, it needs to kick into high gear next week or else they're going to lose all luster.
Michael Cole sets up the video package for the newest celebrity entrant into the WWE Hall of Fame, Kid Rock, who apparently is from Michigan, I think. Anyway,
yeah.
He's done songs for pay-per-views for like 20 years. He sang Undertaker's theme song in 2000. That's about it. But now, so the thing is, we'll talk about him in a second, but obviously the Kid Rock induction has provoked the outrage of wrestling fans about the celebrity wing. Now, you know how Cyndi Lauper's like the first name that you would bring up as kind of like, why is she not there?
Yeah. Now, for sure.
Dean Puckering had said something, and I feel like she has turned it down. Because I just don't imagine that we would get this far without them doing it. Because she's
I'll completely disagree, but go ahead, though.
Well, because she's a bigger star. She would get them some mainstream publicity. So, I don't know. I can't really imagine why she would not have been asked by now to do it. But I mean, would it, obviously she deserves to be in there. But the thing that just made me almost fall out of an aeroplane and die was, so obviously there's people who, you know, talk about Andy Kaufman or Cyndi Lauper, and then Fuyu on the community, I don't know what the person, I don't know if that's the person's real name or not, but anyway, that the person on the Facebook community was saying, I can't believe that Kid Rock's going in. What about Cyndi Lauper and David Arquette?
Yeah, former WCW World Heavyweight Champion, Kenny.
Now, I am all for... Like, the thing is, I don't give a fuck if you put Kid Rock in or not. Does not bother me. It's a celebrity wedding, doesn't mean anything. Drew Carey's in there, who gives a fuck? But Kid Rock did not... Kid Rock was not responsible for one of the moments that ruined a company and changed the wrestling business for the worse. And then Fuyu's argument was, but he donated his money to charity. So? That makes... And then he was like, well, James Dudley's in the Hall of Fame. He was the first fucking African-American to run a wrestling show in the States. Like, I cannot comprehend in any person's brain that
Kenny, how many other people did a movie with Diamond Dallas Page?
He was so bad, right, that David Arquette, who has been on WWE TV 4 or 5 times, they don't even mention that he won the title.
They avoid
mentioning it.
He's been on WWE TV automatically. There you go. There's your reason to put him into the Hall of Fame.
But he's not even been allowed to be like on this side of the barrier. He just gets shown in the crowd.
But he's in the crowd. He attends. Surely, I bet he brings his replica title too that he actually won. He's one of those guys that owns a replica title that actually deserves to hold it because he was a former world champion, Kenny. Have you ever been a world champion of wrestling before?
This is a ridiculous conversation. The idea
is... Have you answered the question, Kenny McIntosh?
I've not competed for a World Heavyweight Championship. If I had, then we'd be having a different conversation.
Then you've never stepped between the ropes. You never stepped inside the ropes. We managed to say the name of the show on the show. That's pretty good.
I know the Hall of Fame is fake and it's all like, and you know, I'm not saying you really need to argue about it, but I just, even within the context of a WWE Hall of Fame discussion, and think about the ridiculousness of that discussion anyway, David Arquette, I mean, we may as well induct Russo at this point if that's where we're going. Like,
Kenny, okay, first and foremost, Vince Russo created everything that you love about wrestling, so you need to chill with that. Everything from he gave The Rock the name The Rock, and he told him how to speak, and he told Steve Austin to drink beer, and he gave him the 316 speech, and I know that because I heard it on his podcast. He took credit for it, so I believe him, naturally. But speaking on being a dumb fucking idiot, speaking of being a dumb fucking idiot, though, let's go back to this David Arquette thing. Kenny, have you ever competed in the squared circle, inside the ropes, as it were?
I have not, no.
No, then maybe you should shut the fuck up, because David Arquette has competed in the squared circle. He's won championships of the world, in fact, the same title that Harley Race held, Kenny. And you know who else held that title? Bruno Sammartino. Did you know that?
Bruno didn't hold the WCW title.
Bet you didn't know that. You know who else did?
You just got it wrong. Bruno did not hold that title. You're talking rubbish.
Luthes.
No, you can't get it wrong and then move on. Acknowledge that you were wrong.
Kenny, you're not playing along with the bit.
Okay, Bruno Sammartino, Luthes, keep going.
Luthes, right. Yeah, that wrestling bear from the Hart family that was on the Hart property. I don't know what the fuck his name was.
Benoit.
Benoit Balls, maybe. I don't know about Benoit. But all these esteemed people who held the WCW Heavyweight Championship in its 175-year reign.
You know who else held it?
Who's that?
Vince Russo.
Vince Russo, he did. And he created that title too, actually. He was down there in 1825 and said, Bro, I got a great idea, bro. And then he came up with that title. He chiseled that, Kenny. He's immortal. I don't know if you knew that. But yeah, no, I fully support this. David Arquette, get him on the same bill, Kenny. David Arquette and Vince Russo, good, and they can induct each other, suck each other off on the grandest stage of them all. How about that? How you think about that? How you like them apples, McIntosh?
So Kid Rock's getting in the Hall of Fame. It does not bother me either one way or another. Sondra and I kind of had this conversation. Like, Sondra and I kind of laugh about it because we do quite enjoy his terrible music sometimes. Not like we're not going to buy an album, but like, you know, that I love that Lonely Road of Faith video they did in like 2002 with all the old school people. Like it's an Undertaker song. It doesn't bother me, but I guess why do you think that, you know, so Drew, in the celebrity wing, I'm trying to have this discussion semi-seriously, not as ridiculous. So the celebrity wing, you've got the people who kind of, you know, for better or for worse, within the celebrity sphere, do deserve to be in there. Like Mr. T, sadly Donald Trump, and Mike Tyson. And then you've got guys like, you've got people like Drew Carey, and what other celebrities have they put in? Schwarzenegger, those kind of people. Why do you think that Kid Rock is someone that people... because he's done about the same as those guys have in WWE. Why is there such vitriol to him going in?
Garbage music, garbage human, garbage person. Just really, really bad. He's sort of like the... he's sort of like the Nickelback for the type of music that he makes, you know, to where it's just very simplistic and... it's just intellectually inferior type of music that's very easy to digest. It's not really that catchy or anything. Like, for me personally, I don't give a shit about his music. My wife fucking screamed like a banshee whenever that song came on, and we couldn't fast forward it because we were watching it illegally on the internet as opposed to our rightful DVR, which we paid for. But the second that came on, she was just... screaming bloody murder, half crying. I had a horrible day at work and now I have to listen to the worst song of the 90s. So, for a lot of people, it just touches a nerve like that. For me personally, I mean, you know, he wanted to dabble in politics and take my health care away to literally murder me. So, you know, he can go and fuck himself. And if I ever met him, I'd spit in his face. So that's how I feel about him personally, because if you want me dead, then, you know, fuck you. But yeah, so that's my opinion on the matter. From what I gather, they're inducting him because he did a song once, and to me it's like Jim Johnson's not in there, and he did a lot of songs once. So
I mean, they're going to put in a celebrity every year. It doesn't really matter. You know, I get why people don't like him, but I really don't think it's the hill to die on to get that angry about it. doesn't really matter.
Do you want to know why I'm pissed about it, Kenny? Now I have to hear him put on a fucking concert at WrestleMania. That's why I'm pissed about it.
He did that once before.
Yeah, but I'm going to have to fucking be there in person. I thought I could get through my life without having Saw Kid Rock in concert on my fucking seat whenever I get to fucking heaven. And St. Peter's at the pearly gates looking over my resume. Well, I don't know. I mean, fuck. You know, you saw Kid Rock in concert.
I love that you think you're going to heaven. I love that you think that's where you're going. Okay.
Well, that would be the final fucking straw to get me there. I do a lot of good deeds, Kenny. I just say a lot of awful things. I like to think that actions speak louder than words. Thank you.
So yeah, well, so he's getting inducted. Sondra and I unabashedly will dance to his crap theme tunes that he does for wrestling shows. It's interesting because he's one of those people who, when you see like video of him when he was like 29 or 30 years old, he just looked like any American stoner. But the thing about being an American stoner is that when you get to 50, you look like a big turd.
You mean all the crack rocks that Kid Rock is smoking?
Yeah, and I also love it. People were like, the photo that they used for his induction is like the best photo. It's like he's just decided he has to go to rehab, and they've done a promo shot when he's on the way in to Betty Ford.
I was going to say, it's like TMZ caught him right as he's going into the clinic.
So, yeah, good times.
He makes you with the hip! Ha! Oh, man.
So there you go. He's going in. We get Miz.
The rehab?
Here's hoping. Miz TV. We get Miz TV with Seth Rollins and Finn Balor. He basically tries to like pit them against each other, and they kind of laugh at him, and then he basically does pit them against each other. So he kind of wins because Rollins ends up punching Balor after Balor clotheslines the Miz outside. The Miz was great here because he's just an absolute atrocious human, and he's great, and he got what he wanted. So I thought the segment was fun.
It was a good time. The segment was good, and the match was great, actually. I really enjoyed the wrestling.
Yeah, and we'll get to that in a little bit. Sheamus and Cesaro came out for a match with the Miztourage, but then Sheamus and Cesaro got attacked by all the tag teams on Raw. Miztourage, Revival, Rhino and Heath Slater, Titus Worldwide, The Club. So we'll cover that later on when we get a tag team battle royal to determine who's going to face them at WrestleMania. So up next, we had John Cena coming out. He talked about how we're less than 4 weeks away from WrestleMania. He's finally found his road to WrestleMania. He's not going to be fighting at WrestleMania this year. He's going to be there as a fan. He's going to just, you know, have a good time. He ends up getting in the crowd, taking a drink of a guy's beer. He leads a This Is Awesome chant. He leads a One More chant. And then he tries to lead a Let's Go Roman chant, which cackled me.
Oh, so good. What a rib.
Oh.
What a rib.
Beautiful. Then he gets back in the ring. He's got a let's, you know, and then he says, look, let's get out of the way because we can't do a WrestleMania. He says, let's go Cena. Everyone says Cena sucks. We get the back and forth. So then we have up next. Now, bear in mind that Sondra is in attendance for this. Sondra's in the building. And she doesn't like John Cena. She's not crazy in The Undertaker. So she messaged me at the end of this segment and she said, that was amazing and I want to see the match. Which to me is like, if you get her on board, you know you've done a good job. So Cena ends up saying that, you know, he's just going to do what he's not supposed to do. He says, screw it, I challenge The Undertaker to match at WrestleMania. The fans cheer. He says it again. He was told the match was impossible, even though the fans want to see it. He said that he never asked why it wasn't possible. Is it because of the WWE executives? But no, it's not, because it was because of them. They would have cut his mic off. He keeps issuing the challenge, and then he said, my mic's still on. It's not WWE that don't want it. It's not the fans. There's one person that's stopping Cena versus Undertaker, and that's The Undertaker. And he was like, get over yourself. Stop hiding your head in the sand because you're so embarrassed and ashamed of what people are going to say about you. Stop hiding behind your lame excuses. You're not too old, washed up, or broken down. And if you were broken down, you wouldn't be posting workout videos on your wife's Instagram. The only person stopping this match from happening is you. You self-centered, conceited egomaniac. He asked the fans if they want to see Undertaker kick his ass in Tombstone in front of 75,000 people. The people roared. And he said WrestleMania is either going to be a party or he's going to go in as Undertaker's opponent. Balls in your court, dead man. Time to see if you're still alive. If I were you, I know what I would do. I would want one more match. He drops the mic to end the segment. He was incredible here. Like, John Cena, for all the shit that we give him sometimes that he deserves, there is not many people in wrestling who can get a crowd to be in the palm of their hands like he has them here. I thought he did great. What did you think of it?
Kenny, I'll be perfectly honest. I've been kind of dreading talking to you this week regarding this.
Oh, because you knew I'd love it and you hate it.
Yeah, because I don't want to, you know me, I'm never shy about sharing an opinion, but I don't want to rain on your parade. And I feel like whenever there's something that you're really excited about and I just absolutely am not into it whatsoever, I feel like I'm intentionally raining on your parade then. And I hate the idea of doing that.
But I mean, why is it not working for you? Because it does seem there's a lot of people kind of coming out who didn't seem to be into it before that are into the idea. So what are the main reasons why it's still not working for you? Like, what, like, did you think Cena's promo was good? Was it bad?
It was fine. It's as good as a Cena promo can be now, because the problem with Cena, if I may quote Val, John Cena's number one fan, everything that stupid motherfucker has to say is the same goddamn promo that he did the week before. He never gets any better. He never shows any emotion. So For me, it's sort of like that. I agree with Val to an extent. John Cena, like, he shows, I call it faux motion, right? It's not emotion, it's faux motion, to where he will kind of fake get into it. He'll be like, ooh, yeah, here I am, I'm acting, and I'm playing wrestler. And he gets out there and he makes a big production of it, and that's what he's doing here. You know, it's just sort of like, well, gonna go out and start reading off my lines and I'll get the crowd into it. And he did, so, you know, I mean, he's effective in that way, but it's just not very genuine to me. That's not why I am not looking forward to this, though, Kenny. I don't think this match has a happy ending for anyone involved. Like, I'm going over the outcomes in my head, and the only way I can justify this match is if The Undertaker wins, because if he loses again, that's sort of, I said on Twitter, it's sort of sad, not in like a, this is the way that you were trained to respond to this, and we evoked an emotional response out of you, like, you know, some Kurosawa film, or, you know, like some, Grave of the Fireflies bullshit, where you're sitting there weeping like a baby because the creative geniuses behind whatever production that you're watching had you in the palm of their hand. This is sad in like a, why does grandma's nursing home have so many bed bugs? Like, it's kind of like that kind of sad, to where you're just sort of like, oh boy, I didn't know that I didn't want to see that until now. So yeah, if The Undertaker loses, I'm guessing that's it, and he just goes out, you know, you had the streak, and it had a few dents in it along the way, but if he loses again, then it's like, man, did the streak ever really matter? You know? I almost feel like the wrestling fans that died before the streak did were the only ones that the streak ultimately mattered to. You know?
You know, so, the response is that there's a lot of people on Twitter that have been talking to me about this today. And I thought Cena was world-class last night. I did. I think he deserves credit for it. I think that a lot of the times he is sort of, what was that thing you called it? Faux motion or whatever it was?
Yeah. Faux motion. He shows faux motion.
I think he has a lot of time, but I think what was so good about this promo was he did three different promos in one. He did the kind of usual John Cena shtick, then he did a serious challenge, but he was able to take the crowd with him on what he does, and that's you know, if you're world class, you can get fans to do that if you know what you're doing. The thing about this match, though, is that, like, this match was never at any point going to be AJ Styles versus Nakamura. It's never going to be that match. It was never designed to be. But I think that what some people don't understand, I'm not saying you, but what some people don't understand is people say, oh, it's going to be terrible. It's going to be terrible. But if you watch that documentary from the WWE 24 thing from last year, Undertaker seems very aware of how he was last year and how he was positioned and how he came across and all that kind of stuff. He doesn't strike me as the guy that's going to come back and do another one if he thinks that he can't do it. You know, he's had the hip surgery, he's done whatever. This is going to be like an electric atmosphere match for the casual fan or whatever. Like, people would, you'll see wrestling fans coming back to watch Cena versus Undertaker. So I think that it's going to have a lot of goodwill going towards it anyway. So, but the worry is that Cena's not been that great recently. You know, he's been more bad than good.
Mm-hmm.
And now Undertaker's going to come back, and it's kind of, how can they do it? You know, Undertaker's not had a good WrestleMania match in 3 years, 4 years, five maybe, five, probably 5 years to be fair. The Punk one was the last good one. I thought I liked his match with Brock at SummerSlam a couple of years ago.
Yeah, it was fine.
But yeah, so it has got a lot going against it, which is kind of part of the reason why I really hope that they prove people wrong. Maybe they won't. But I just have, my gut says that it's going to be good. It's not going to be a technical classic, but it strikes me as more of kind of like a Rock and Hogan thing from WrestleMania 18.
That's fine. I'm not worried about the match in the ring, to be honest with you, because it's going to be bad. That's fine. That's not while we're watching it. It's going to be a bad match because John Cena needs to be in there with someone who's good to have a good match, and The Undertaker needs to be in there with a guy like AJ Styles who can bounce off of him to have a good match. This is just, like, in terms of chemistry-wise, this is going to be a bad match. That's fine. Like, I've already got that through my head. I'm not everything on WrestleMania has to be Nakamura and AJ, and that's why we have Nakamura and AJ, right? Something for everybody on the card, right? But my problem with it is you've got a guy who hasn't won a big match in over a year in John Cena, right? Like, when was the last big match he won? AJ Styles, whenever he won the title at Royal Rumble last year?
So yeah, pay-per-view-wise, yeah.
Yeah, so, like, that's the last big match that he's won. So he's been in, like, a year-long slump. Okay, well, he comes in and he faces The Undertaker. So he either goes, hey, you know what I need to break my slump? I need to face a decrepit old man in order to break my slump. And then he goes in and he beats The Undertaker and pisses on the grave of the dead man, right? So that's fine and dandy, but does that really elevate John Cena if he beats The Undertaker? And furthermore, if he beats The Undertaker, what does that say about The Undertaker? That he can't even beat the guy who's been down on his luck for over a year? And I feel like that would just showcase The Undertaker, the person, Mark Calloway. I feel like that would showcase The Undertaker to Mark Calloway the way that he feared on that 24 documentary, where he said, I don't want to be viewed as the has-been or the old man who just keeps coming back to come back. And I feel like that is what The Undertaker would be if he were to do this match.
I mean, I feel like, you know, if you're not into it, you're not going to be into it. Nothing I can say to you is going to convince you. But it feels that you're very set that he's going to beat him. That he's going to beat The Undertaker. For what I like about it is I like the drama of it. I like the drama of exactly what you're saying. Of will Cena beat him and that's what happens. You can bet 100 times over that I'm going to be, you know, cheering for The Undertaker in that stadium. But for the first time in a couple of years, like, I didn't really feel... Like, the last Undertaker match where I was properly invested at WrestleMania was Punk. And I've not really been invested in any of the WrestleMania matches since. But I am invested in this because I desperately want him to beat John Cena. So for me, that's why it works, because I'm invested in it again. I wasn't invested in Roman Reigns and The Undertaker. There was nothing there for me. Like, we knew what it was going to be. You knew it was Roman Reigns coming in to beat The Undertaker, and that's what it was. The match with Shane McMahon, they wrestled 30 minutes, it wasn't believable. The match with Bray was nothing, blah, 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 blah. So for me, this is kind of like a return to old of an Undertaker WrestleMania match. But they've got a lot to live up to in terms of the story of the match and how it plays out. And WWE sometimes can do these attraction matches really well and sometimes do them really badly. Mm-hmm. So it's all going to be how they make it play out. And I think a lot of people want it, so give it to people and see what happens. But it'll be interesting.
I think my other thing too, though, is do you really think that The Undertaker is the kind of guy who will retire with his hand raised?
He's not retiring. He's already been announced for the Saudi Arabia thing on April 27th. He's not retiring.
So then, yeah, he very well could beat John Cena then.
It just doesn't strike me, like, it doesn't strike me that he's going to come back to put over Cena. And I for all the things that people say about Cena, I don't necessarily think Cena would want to beat him. I think Cena would gladly take the tombstone and get pinned by The Undertaker. I think he would find that he would avidly wanting that to be the outcome. Because, you know, they've wanted to do this match for so long. He did the promo last year with Miz saying, you know, I want to be standing here with The Undertaker, not you.
So yeah, I was going to say, they were planting the seeds of that for years.
So the thing is, you know, twice now Cena's made those challenges and the crowd have responded very positively. Now, here's my criticism of the potential angle. And I think it was Karan had said this on Twitter, and it's my biggest fear about the whole storyline. So John Cena came out here and spoke about The Undertaker in a way that not really that many people have spoken to him like. You know? Not many people have said all that stuff about him. You know? Like, call him an ego man. Now, for me, The Undertaker has to respond one time before WrestleMania.
Sure.
And I don't think that mumbling and rest in peace is enough this time. He has to respond. He has to respond about leaving his gloves and his hat in the ring last year. He has to respond why he's going to face John Cena. So for me, the worry is, what I feel that I need from it is I need one good Undertaker promo before this show. And the last 4 years, he's never done that. So my worry is that he doesn't do that because, you know, like, a lot of times it's like, well, less is more. And this time I'm going to side with Frazier. If less is more, imagine how much more could be. So I just want to see that promo. I want to see a promo where he explains himself and he gets people excited. Not just another, here's the dead man, here's the gong, and that's it. That's my fear about the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah, which it easily could be. And, I mean, they don't have a lot of time to build it up. So I'd say that we have, say, another week to go before, like, if there's nothing going on in 2 weeks with this, I don't want to say dead in the water. That's hyperbole, but dire straits.
We've got three Raws left. Now, next week's Raw is in Dallas, and he lives in Texas.
Yeah, it's got to be. It's got to be.
So we'll see. I mean, again, you know, the question is, what kind of Undertaker do we get? Do we get a hybrid? Do we get exactly the same ones we got before? So I just hope that they do something interesting with that.
Because, I hope so, man.
But we'll see. We'll see. People.
I hope so for your sake, because I was telling Val while we were watching this, because Val just goes, this is going to be a fucking abortion. and I go, God, I was just like, Val, I really hope it's not. And not for me. I don't give a shit one way or the other. But Kenny's been fucking banging on about this for 4 years now. And I just want Kenny to be happy with this. That's all I want. It's not for me. It doesn't have to be for me. But fuck's sake, just give Kenny what he wants once, please.
But you know, it's funny. I feel exactly the same way as you do about Taker Cena about Nakamura and AJ. I feel the exact same. Like, I don't think that the story is very exciting or very interesting, and I don't think it's going to be. But my hope, to be fair, though, they
couldn't really build the story or anything because we didn't even know if AJ was retaining the title yet.
Yes,
as we record this, SmackDown's going on the air in 15 minutes. So
we'll find out what they're going to do. But my hope for you...
And this will be the SmackDown that follows their blow-off pay-per-view. So now we get the build to it.
My hope for you, though, is that, you know, you like, so for me, I mean, the thing is, if Undertaker and John Cena is not what I want it to be, it's fine. Like, I'll be disappointed, but it's fine. I'm interested in a lot of matches in WrestleMania, but for you, Nakamura and AJ is your big match. So I hope for your sake that they give it the time and they get, you know, 20 minutes or something and get to tear the house down. But, you know, Nakamura and AJ, I'm into it, but it wouldn't, like, detrimentally affect my enjoyment of the show if it was there or not. But if it happens, I'm sure it will be great and I'll enjoy it. But
I think the difference between those is Undertaker and Cena is a sports entertainment segment, which the build is more important than the match. And Nakamura and AJ is more of a traditional Japanese wrestling contest where the match itself is more important than the build.
I would half agree with that, because the AJ Nakamura doesn't really need to have a story. It can be nothing. But I do think that the Taker Cena thing is 50% based on the build and 50% based on what they do. Because they can have all the goodwill in the world going into it, but they need to deliver something that people want to see. They need to deliver something that, you know, nobody's expecting it to be technically good, but it needs to be a big sports entertainment spectacle. And I guess we'll see if they deliver. So we'll move on. Sheamus and Cesaro vent Kurt Angle, and then he says he's going to do the Raw Tag Team Battle Royal in the main event. Elias is introduced by Jojo. He's wearing a neck brace. he said, you know, I've got one question. Then there's a long pause and he just says, this is your fault, and leaves.
Poor Elias. Poor the Elias. Show lacked Elias, actually. I would be, if I were Sandra, I would just be despondent right now that I didn't get to hear Elias sing a song.
And I don't know how she got through it. Then Braun Strowman delivers a big words promo where he talks about dropping the piano in Elias.
I did like that piano popped up twice in the thing, though. That actually did get a pop out of me.
He said he's going to create his own path and then guaranteed that someone would get these hands at WrestleMania. We got Seth Rollins versus Finn Balor. It goes about 15 minutes, and in the end, Rollins performs a superplex. And then he goes to go for the Falcon Arrow, and Balor catches him with an inside cradle and pins him. So the story is Seth Rollins can't beat Finn Balor. I thought the finish was really good, and the match was fun. And there's Jonathan Coachman at one point says, imagine how much better this is going to be with The Miz. Oh, Jonathan Coachman is fucking terrible.
Oh, he's so lost at sea. It's endearing, though. It's endearing. It's like whenever you bring whenever you go to a party and you got a guy there that doesn't know shit about wrestling, right? But he's there, you know, he's there for the pizza and the beer, right? And everybody's watching the pay-per-view and he's just sitting there. He's like, how much does that guy weigh?
Oh, God. The match was good, I thought. With Balor and Rollins.
Oh, yeah, great match. A lot of really... I liked how they kept reversing their signature moves on each other. I thought that was really cool, yeah. I was all about this. Give me that match. I can't wait for that match. That is the match that I am looking forward to the second most at WrestleMania, Kenny.
There you go. Up next, they throw to a video package on the Fabulous Moolah. And they basically announce that there is going to be a Fabulous Moolah Battle Royal at WrestleMania. Basically, it's to get all the women on the show. There's various clips of women on the roster talking about Moolah. They try and compare her to, like, you know, other women, famous women that have been empowering and stuff. And the problem with the whole thing is that Fabulous Moolah was an atrocious human being because she pimped out. So, for anybody who doesn't know, basically, the Fabulous Moolah kind of had, like, the reins of the US wrestling scene, and she would train girls, and then she would basically be in charge of women and, like, sending women to territories and stuff, and then she would keep part of their money, because the way she saw it was she was getting the bookings for them, and, you know, all they were having to do was wrestle. But then also there was a lot of reports of when women went to go and wrestle that she'd sent them out, they would then have to perform sex acts on men that they weren't aware of and all this sort of stuff. Really horrible stuff.
She was quite literally a forceful madam.
Yes. Now, she came from a very poor background, and I guess people who liked her and knew her kind of said, you know, she never wanted to go back to being poor, but there's a difference between that and being a fucking pimp. Yeah, and then when Vince McMahon Sr. was passing the business over to Vince Jr., Fabulous Moolah was one of the people that he said, you need to take care of her. And Vince Jr. did. Now, I really get a kick out of the Fabulous Moolah character. I'm separating the person and the character.
Sure.
Loved the big dollar glasses and stuff like that. And she always looked 100 years old whenever I saw her. So she always made me laugh. But then you get older and you read the stuff and it's really tacky that this is named after her.
From the documentaries I've watched and everything, she actually, like, ran a house too. And I don't think it's any secret that at the very least, the Fabulous Moolah was bisexual. I think she was a lesbian though. Is that correct?
She was definitely bisexual, if not fully a lesbian, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so she would run this house for quote-unquote Moolah's girls. And a lot of these girls, she would get very young, up-and-coming wrestlers, and she would make them live in this house with her. And a lot of times things would turn sexual and everything. And so, you know, she would find these girls on the outskirts to where, you know, they had a bad home life or something like that. and offer them respite and bring them into her dwellings. And I guess, you know, it's hard to say because, you know, I wasn't there, but everything that I've read, it was almost like coercion, to where it's like she was coercing these women into living the lifestyle with her and Mae Young, right? So, because Mae Young was also a longtime staple at Moolah's house. So she would open her door to these young girls who were looking for a way out of a bad life, and she would train them to wrestle, and in exchange, she would require them to be obedient, I guess is the word. Take care of the territory, send them off the territories, take care of the men there, and she would take a portion of their earnings. So really nasty stuff. You can read between the lines. There's several really good documentaries I've seen. I'm trying to think.
There's the one that says Lipstick and Dynamite.
Lipstick and Dynamite's a great one, actually. Thank you. Yeah, yeah, that's a fantastic one. Definitely watch that. She's actually, like, in that. It's not like it paints her in a negative portrayal. It paints her in the portrayal of Moolah.
Yeah, because it's all about... there's another woman called, like, Gladys Killam Gillam and Mildred Burke and stuff, and they're all going to meet at this convention and stuff, and you can tell there's tension between them all.
Great resentment, and you can tell that it brings up some bad memories whenever they get near Moolah. So, yeah, definitely, if you don't know a whole lot about it, definitely research it and look it up for yourself. You know, all we can report are the secondhand accounts. We weren't there, but there's enough secondhand accounts that if there's smoke, there's fire, I think.
See, I don't really mind that she is iconified the way that she is.
If I may quote Val, she goes, you know, Val didn't have an issue with this being named after Moolah. And her reasoning for that was, name someone in the women's wrestling business that held the title and had prestige and the respect amongst her peers for longer or more than Mae Young. And Fabulous Moolah. And, you know, in strict kayfabe terms, I understand Val's point, but I disagree with Val. I think that obviously this should have been named after Sherry or somebody like that instead.
I mean, people were saying like China. There should never be a battle royal named after China. I mean, that's ridiculous. Sherry's a good one. I mean, the tough thing is there's not really somebody comparable, because Sherry didn't have a super long run in WWE or anything as a wrestler. You know, she's more beloved as a manager, really.
For sure.
People like Luna had very... actually, Luna was one of the women who got away from Moolah, interestingly enough.
But, yeah, absolutely.
But Moolah's kind of the only one that has that fully long tenure. So, I get Val's point of why it's there. I'm not usually one of the people that gets that bothered about stuff like this, but I do think that... I think it's tacky. I don't know who you name it after instead, but the problem is you can't really take it back now. But I think that they're very lucky that, like, mainstream media kind of doesn't pick up on stuff like this, because if they picked up on this, it would be a PR nightmare for them. But
yeah, it really would. You know, I heard I was listening to an interview with Sean Oliver of Kayfabe Commentaries talking about the Me Too movement. And he said that he was sitting around and, you know, all this stuff was breaking. And then Eric Sims, the manager of like the Iron Sheik and several guys who do kayfabe commentaries DVDs, he said, just wait until these people get a hold of the wrestling business. And Sean Oliver chuckled it off. And then there was sort of like this grim silence that grew over
Listen,
the room. You know,
I even know stuff where it's like wrestling would not survive.
No, it wouldn't. It truly wouldn't. Everyone who gets outraged about an actor groping a woman's breast 20 years ago, man, oh man, if you knew about all the people that you buy the t-shirts of, man.
Yep.
Oh, fucking hell.
But, yeah, it's a very tough thing. I get why people are so upset about it. It's not going to change, and it is going to be called that. And I think it's going to, I think the only way that people are going to be able to kind of stomach it is this is basically based on the character. It's not based on the person. Even though the video was really trying to base it on the person. But,
well, I mean, you know, Andre the Giant, everybody talks about how wonderful he was. He freaking used to call Kamala the N-word all the time to his face. And he was a notorious bully. You know, look at the stuff that he did to Jake Roberts, for crying out loud.
I mean, Andre did terrible stuff, but I'm sure he was a nice guy to other people as well. I don't know enough properly to say, because the thing is, once you get into that kind of territory, it's like, you know,
then it's like, so does everybody just need to be a great person to get anywhere?
I don't have a problem with the Andre Battle Royal. It makes sense because he was that.
I'm just playing devil's advocate. I absolutely don't care either.
The Hall of Fame only got made because of Andre. You know, they started because of him. But yeah, it's, I was when I saw the video, I was kind of like, oh, that's quite tacky. But I didn't expect the amount of outrage that there are. But then I guess thinking about it more, especially given in this day and age where, you know, a lot of the women's wrestling stuff, a lot of the women's kind of Me Too stuff and all that is out there, then it's probably not that shocking that this provoked the reaction that it has. Quite rightly so. I understand it.
Yeah. In all honesty, it was kind of refreshing to see how many people actually knew their wrestling history.
Yeah, there was even an article on Forbes.com about it. So,
was there really mainstream press on that, huh?
Yep.
Wow.
Anyway, so up next we've got a video package on Ronda Rousey for WWE. Up next, Asuka comes out. Charlie Caruso's there to interview her. Alexa Bliss comes out and interrupts her. Alexa Bliss is basically kind of, you know, making fun of Asuka about how, you know, you picked Charlotte because you couldn't beat me. Asuka says, you know, to be the woman, you have to beat the woman. Asuka kind of shouts at Alexa Bliss, and then Alexa Bliss just kind of tries to take the piss out of her. We then get a match with Asuka and Mickie James, where Asuka defeats her. Then Alexa Bliss kind of makes up with Nia Jax. They're best friends, they hug and all that kind of stuff. She's going to be in her corner next week when she faces Asuka. Then Nia beats a jobber, and we cut back to the locker room, and it's Alexa and Mickie talking about how much of a loser Nia Jax is, who's let her family down. They laughed about her. Says, you know, she can't handle the truth. Alexa said that she, you know, Nia Jax needs her. Look at her and look at me. And she's easily manipulated. And Charlie Caruso comes in and she's like, the microphone's been on the whole time. And Nia Jax was initially kind of upset and then just angry. And then she like hauls ass to the back. And when she gets there, Alexa and Mickie James have got out of Dodge. And Nia Jax is just screaming and angry. I thought everybody played their part really well here. And this Nia and Alexa stuff is really good, I think.
Yeah, this is, it's amazing what a night can do in terms of differences, you know? Asuka's, I actually thought that her English here was really good, and I liked her promo a lot. So I thought everybody involved here was really good. I posted on Twitter, though, I posted that video that I sent you of Minoru Suzuki beating the living fuck out of Asuka in Japan. And I was all like, yeah, I don't really buy it whenever Mickie James lays out Asuka with, like, one hit from behind and Asuka has to sell it for 3 minutes whenever she took this fucking ass-beating from Minoru Suzuki, who was just, like, open hand smacking her in the head and kicking her with the heel of his boot in the back of the skull. And, yeah, I don't really believe that that would lay her out whenever she survived the onslaught that is Minoru Suzuki.
Yeah, no, I get it's when I was listening to that PW Torch thing, and this Travis Bryant guy was like, I don't like the way that Alexa Bliss talks to Asuka, you know, with the language stuff. It's like, she's a fucking heel, you imbecile. My God. It was infuriating.
The thing with Wade Keller too, man. I don't know. You know, for years, Kenny, he's like, I've overheard these rumors of him like having something on Jim Cornette, you know, to where he's like holds it over and he's all like, oh well, Jim Cornette better not mess with me or I'll expose him for blah blah blah. And I sit there and I'm just thinking, if it's that bad, why would you like threaten someone with it and not just come out with it, right? Like, if it actually happened or it was actually bad, like, wouldn't you expose that to be a good person instead of just, like, blackmail somebody if it were real? You know, just like, oh, look at me on my high horse.
Now,
virtue signaling like a champ.
I will say, in the background, I have this week's episode of SmackDown on silent, and I just want to say that they have just put up a graphic, David, saying that tonight Shane McMahon has a WrestleMania announcement.
Okay.
So I guess that's going to be his thing. But yeah, I thought the Nia Jax and Alexa Bliss stuff was great, and I thought it was nice that they brought in Asuka to kind of like finish off being part of Raw. I liked that. I liked that was there. We got a video package in the Ultimate Deletion, which is going to take place next week. We get introduced to Queen Rebecca, King Maxwell, Lord Wolfgang, Senior Benjamin, and Vanguard One. We see the Lake of Reincarnation, and Bray Wyatt has been sentenced to Ultimate Deletion. Bray Wyatt then cuts a promo that I almost fell asleep during. And yeah, next week we're getting the Ultimate Deletion. What do you think?
I can't wait. I can't wait. It's the thing I'm looking forward to the most next week, actually. This promo, like, I was medium on it. I was keeping an open mind. This promo has me over the moon, Kenny. I can't wait for the Ultimate Deletion.
It's going to be good.
It's going to be so fun. I'm seriously so excited about it. I am so excited.
They're putting all the pieces in play. Now, obviously, the Jeff Hardy arrest, he apparently was involved, and I don't know if they're going to take him out of it, because don't know what's going to happen with that.
Apparently, like, the difference between the arrest and, like, the Uso arrest is apparently Jeff, like, crashed his car. So that's not good.
Nope.
Yeah.
We see Kurt Angle shaking his head backstage. Yeah, I knew Bray was crazy, but what's happened to Matt?
That was great.
Kurt then tells one of his referees that he's going to be the referee for Ultimate Deletion. The referee's like, "Did I do something wrong?" And Kurt said, "No, I just need you to make sure they get back to Raw in one piece." So they're setting everything up.
Dude, this is up my alley, man. I'm excited, like, legit.
I'm cautiously optimistic, is the way I would put it.
The way you with Cena and The Undertaker, that's the way I am with the Ultimate Deletion.
Well, hopefully we're both right and all's right with the world.
Yes! We can all hope for that.
We get a hype video for next week. Brock Lesnar's going to be in Dallas. The Ultimate Deletion as well. Oh, and Asuka's going to be there for one more week. The main event, though, is a tag team battle royal. The winners get a shot at the tag titles of WrestleMania with The Bar. We've got The Club, The Revival, Heath Slater and Rhino, Titus Worldwide and The Miz Taraj when Braun Strowman comes out on his own and he basically kills the tag team division. And the last thing he does is he throws out Karl Anderson and screams, "I'm going to WrestleMania," before winning the match. Braun Strowman has been victorious. So as of right now, Braun Strowman is going on to face The Bar at WrestleMania. Will he have a tag team partner? Will he be in his own? There are very mixed reviews about this, David. What did you make of Braun Strowman here and him coming for The Bar at WrestleMania?
Vince McMahon hates tag team wrestling and he wants to kill it. So that's what he's doing. This is really, really bad. Not a fan whatsoever. It's going to completely shit on The Bar. A lot of people were like, "Oh, that tag division, it doesn't matter anyway. So who cares that he beat up all those teams?" Well, the problem is that he's going to go on to defeat The Bar by himself in like a minute at WrestleMania. You actually think they're going to devote any amount of time to that match, given that there's 14 fucking matches? No, they're not going to do that. They're going to have him murder them and move on and become the tag team champions by himself. Further, just this felt like Attitude Era bullshit, you know? And I'm just not a fan of it. And I think that Cesaro and Sheamus have done such a good job in the tag division that they deserve something better than to lose to one guy in 2 minutes at WrestleMania. And I think that's kind of bullshit.
I'm torn on it. Like, I like the idea of Braun just being like, "I'm going to kill these jobber people and The Revival and go after the tag titles." But at the same time, I kind of want to see The Bar do something good. So it's one of those weird things. It all depends how it plays out.
I've heard rumors that Braun's partner might end up being Elias, which...
Now, see, I want Braun's partner to be James Ellsworth. Bring this shit full circle and have the guy that made Braun Strowman, because I'm sorry, James Ellsworth made Braun Strowman. All those other jobbers before and after that didn't really matter. He was the guy that you took notice of Braun Strowman because he was so memorable. Have it all come full circle and they bring him back and they become the tag team champions. I would be all about that, Kenny.
It could happen for sure. I'm not fully going to shit in it yet because I don't know where it's going, but my hope is that I don't really have a problem with what he did here because I don't really think any of the teams are being featured heavily enough that it's a problem. But the bar I really like. So the hope is that they do something decent with it. I do think that Strowman versus the bar is a decent attraction that's different. But it's all how you do it. And like you say, if he beats them in like 10 seconds, then it's kind of bullshit.
Yeah, yeah. But it's going to completely shit on the bar and all the hard work that they've done. So,
I feel quite bad because I don't really have anything to say because I don't really know where it's going yet. So,
yeah, we more or less got to just watch it play out, I guess, Kenny.
Overall, though, we don't do thumbs here, we do ratings. Out of 10, what would this episode of Raw do for you?
By and large, this episode was a huge misstep, I think. I really enjoyed the Ultimate Deletion package. The match between Finn Balor and Seth Rollins was great. Really enjoyed that. I thought that the Alexa Bliss and Nia Jax stuff with Asuka, really good touch. Enjoyed all of that. Good stuff. The rest of the show, though, by and large, pretty forgettable. I thought that the stuff that they did with Braun was a huge step back. I thought that the stuff that they did with the Universal title picture was a massive step back. And no Ronda Rousey hurt the show a bit. I'm going to go for a 6 out of 10 on this one, Kenny.
I enjoyed the show. I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10. And I'm going to back up because I was talking to somebody on Twitter today. And I said, I think that they're doing 70% a good job with Raw on the road to WrestleMania. Thought the Cena promo was excellent. Thought the Universal title stuff was absolutely bonkers. So I kind of liked it, even though it made no sense. The Nia and Alexa stuff was great. The Ultimate Deletion thing was good. I liked the Strowman thing, but I'm just worried about the bar, which is a problem. What else was on this show? Yeah, I thought it was a decent show. I thought the Balor and Rollins match was good. The Miz TV was good. I think for the most part, Raw's doing a good job of building WrestleMania. I don't really see as much missteps as you did, but I think next week's going to be quite an important show because you kind of have to involve Brock in that story. You kind of have to heat up the Cena Undertaker thing, so they have a lot to do next week.
If I may quote Mr. Dusty Rhodes from WCW commentary circa 1997, it's pivot de bow, baby.
So with that in mind, David...
He could not say the word pivotal. True story.
Where can people find you on Twitter?
You can go and agree with everything that I just said at Zoopsol. And if you disagree with any of it, then block me because I don't even want to ever see you.
You can find me at KennyMC1985. You can get tickets for Paul Heyman in New Orleans. PaulHeymanLive.com is the address to go to. Limited VIP left. General admission still there. You're not going to want to miss this. Kicks off WrestleMania weekend, Thursday, April 5th at 10 p.m. Even if you're in town and you're going to Access, you can come straight after it. But to play us out,
Don't forget also, you can meet Paul Heyman before or after the show. You choose.
Exactly. If you've got plans that day, if you're going to Access, you can come to the show. Show kicks off at 10 p.m. You can come in late at 10:15 if you want. And then after the show, you can come meet Heyman. But, you know, we've given her a bit of a hard time in this show. And I feel we should show her some love. So, you know, some people don't agree with the Fabulous Moolah or her methods or the way that she went about things. But I think that it's only fair that as we play you out this week, we play you the real Fabulous Moolah theme tune. See you next week, everybody. Bye.
Everybody, get up on the whole train.
Come get on the whole train. If it ain't easy. Pimpin' ain't